Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. After Governor Scott Walker released his proposed biennium budget last week, lawmakers and political analysts reacted with a mixture of surprise, praise, and pushback. With the state facing a $2.2 billion deficit, lawmakers will have tough decisions over which programs stay and which ones go. Here today to talk about the budget are Minority Leader Senator Jennifer Schilling, a Democrat from La Crosse, Representative Jill Billings, a Democrat from La Crosse, and Joe Heim. He's UW-La Crosse Professor Emeritus of Political Science. We invited a number of Western Wisconsin Republican lawmakers to appear on this show, but they either declined our offer or could not fit it in their schedule. Joe, let's first start with this deficit idea. Before we even dive into the budget, we hear that Wisconsin could face a $2.2 billion deficit. How did the state get to this point?
Well, it's there's a Democratic and Republican response to that one.
We're hoping you can provide both.
I'll let the Democrats handle it, Democratic side. But you may remember that 4 years ago, the governor faced a $3.6 billion deficit. And I remember at that time, looking into it, you realize that about half of that, and in this case, it's about $1 billion of the $2.2 billion, is in fact a request by agencies for increase in their budgets, which everybody knows they are not going to get. Now, some of this also has to do with Medicaid, and I'm not so sure that that's not required, at least some of that is. But essentially, the real deficit, the structural deficit that they absolutely have to fill, and this is projected over 2 years, is roughly $950 million. In other words, if everything went as is right now and skip all the increases that the agencies wanted, the state would be $950 or so million dollars in the red. And therefore, the governor has to, the legislature has to come up with that somehow. And that's a real deficit, frankly.
And Senator Schilling, you're on the Joint Finance Committee, so you will be very closely looking at these issues from the Democrat standpoint. How do we get to this point?
Well, now as the new minority leader, I am not on the Finance Committee, I appointed two members from the Senate Democratic Caucus to serve on the Finance Committee. But at least kind of with the experience of serving on the Finance Committee for three budgets kind of going in, I understand sort of how we got here. And the fact that we are looking at a $2.2 billion structural deficit, you really look at the last budget and the tax cuts that the governor had put forward. It was about $1 billion in tax cuts. And a sluggish economy equals a deficit. And so now the governor has rolled out this budget. It's troubling in many areas of the budget. It is a troubling budget if you support public education in this state for K-12. It is a troubling budget for our university system with a $300 million cut here on campus at UWL. That's $12 million over the biennium. It is a troubling budget when it comes to the way we finance roads and infrastructure in this state. And so we're seeing a lot of pushback both from Republicans and Democrats about those three key areas in the budget that the governor rolled out. And some of our colleagues have said, you know, certainly the transportation finance, we are not comfortable with $1 billion on the state credit card. That's a short-term solution for this budget cycle, but we'd like something a little bit more forward-thinking and more sustainable. So I think the bonding and that borrowing, that's going to be scaled way back. Many of the legislators who are hearing from their public schools, if it be a rural school or urban schools, they are concerned about the $127 million cut to our public schools because it does not include a per pupil increase in the first year of the budget. We are hearing from campuses who are concerned about what quality education, what it will mean for students and faculty research about keeping those folks here on campus and really what the brand and the value of the UW system will mean heading forward. So there are lots of areas of concern. There's also quite a bit of consolidation under the governor, power grabs under the governor, a lot of merging and transferring of responsibilities from agency to agency. And I think that's also troubling about the citizen input on two boards, particularly the Department of Natural Resources Board, the DATCAP, the Ag Board, and really looking at the citizen input to be advisory, as well as removing the four elected officials on the WEDIC, which is the kind of his job creation agency, the public-private agency of WEDIC, merging that but with another agency, but removing the oversight of the four legislators. And we have seen a lot through the audits of areas that that new WEDC board had some problems and mismanagement because of the attention of the four legislators that were able to call for audit. So I think there is a lot to be work to be done on this budget, and I'm really not hearing a lot of my Republican colleagues embracing this budget as theirs. They continue to point out this is the governor's budget, and on the Finance Committee there will be changes.
So let's dive into some of these issues. Representative Billings, maybe we can talk about the UW system issues first. And I don't want to spend too much time with this because we did talk about this on Newsmakers a couple weeks ago. But the governor has proposed a $300 million cut to the UW system, making the UW system a public authority. And there are a number of committees right now exploring just ways that things could work different within the university system. As a representative to UW-La Crosse with the university in your district, how are you sort of absorbing and taking in all these proposed changes?
Well, this budget's very troubling with higher education. It, as you said, it includes a $3 million cut to the system, which is 13%, and a two-year tuition freeze. And then there's a plan to convert the UW into an independent public authority. Now, this leaves us in a situation where people aren't exactly sure where that puts us. We have to flesh out all the details on that. But these are absolutely historic changes to the relationship between the legislature and the UW system. I've heard from students. I've heard from faculty. I've heard from alumni who are concerned about this. Especially for alumni, when you look for a job, your diploma is kind of golden, right? So the reputation of your system, your school, is important. It says something about the value of that degree. And so when we cut our system and create these changes that are not necessarily for the best, it's causing some unrest.
I'm sure that a lot of the concerns you're hearing are about the cuts, but have you taken a stance on whether or not the UW system should become a public authority, or what have your constituents been telling you about that issue?
Well, there's concern about exactly what that means, and there's concern in the legislature. There are some representatives, some senators who don't necessarily want to give the university that flexibility and freedom. They certainly want to also keep the opportunity to weigh in on tuition and tuition freezes. So in some ways they're giving the university flexibility, but it seems like it's on a short leash. They give them enough leash and then yank them back at the point where they want to say, wait, just a minute. You cannot raise tuition. And we'll see if that also goes through in other elements. But it would provide some more flexibility for the university to look at things like procurement, some building projects. But although they're low-dollar building projects in the scheme of things, the legislature still wants to keep control of the larger building projects. It looks at some issues with compensation and human resources. Going forward, there's a lot of concern about how this is going to affect the system and Wisconsin.
And Joe Heim, I thought about you quite a bit last week as there was discussion about what to do with the Wisconsin idea. I'm wondering if you want to share your thoughts. Governor Walker has backpedaled on the issue, saying he does not want to change the Wisconsin idea and that it was a mistake, but other reports have shown that that's not necessarily the case.
That was the ping pong ball of last week, it seems. A new story was coming out almost every day, and at various times there was denial as to whether the governor knew about it or was really involved in it. But I think the final analysis, it was pretty clear his office was involved because there were some messages between his office and the university and the legislature indicating that they knew exactly what they were doing. In other words, they were drawing lines out of some of those things. You could pick out what do you want, but serving the state was disappeared out of it, basically. Public service in general, there was an issue about research, believe it or not, that was drawn out. And what was inserted, basically, and the governor said this is what he really wanted in there, was an issue of job preparation. In other words, universities should do a better job of and take it on as a mission to make sure that their purpose, one of their purposes is to train people for jobs that are needed in the state of Wisconsin. But in doing that, they crossed out a lot of other stuff that I think is near and dear to the hearts of many university people.
And you're someone I know that is a firm believer in the Wisconsin idea. So people who aren't familiar with it, can you explain how it really differs from other university systems across the country and why you believe it's important to remain intact?
It's a quick summary of it, at least from my recollection, is that they say that the boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state. Translated, what that means is we're there partly as a university to serve the state in its best interest, to do research for the state, to do things, public service for the state. It's one of the major pillars of the university system, and frankly, it's one of the reasons I'm in the university system. I've always believed, and I like the idea, that the university should pay back the tax dollars to people, should do things for the good of the state. And this is a great university system, and frankly, over the years has done a marvelous job of doing just that. Not only just graduating graduates, but serving the state in so many ways. And that's very disappointing to think that that they would pull back from more than a century idea, basically. But the Wisconsin idea is one of the major pillars of the UW system.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the proposed state budget. My guests are Joe Heim. He's a UW La Crosse Professor Emeritus of Political Science. Representative Jill Billings, a Democrat from La Crosse, and Minority Leader Senator Jennifer Schilling, also a Democrat from La Crosse. Maybe along the same lines of education, Senator Schilling, you mentioned concerns about funding for K-12 education. Governor Walker has said that we're basically holding the line on funding in the state. That comes with a freeze, essentially, on property taxes, which is another issue we can talk about next. But, I mean, how will schools in La Crosse do under these proposed budget?
Well, I guess what is interesting here in Wisconsin, while really the nation is recovering from the Great Recession, this is a recession budget. This is a budget that makes millions of cuts in areas that are important and are of value to the citizens of Wisconsin. As we look at a lagging economy, stagnant family wages. We have the worst budget in the country. But we just look at Minnesota. We look across the river and see what they are doing. They are investing in their schools. They have a better job climate. Their family wages are higher than those here in Wisconsin. They are sitting on a $1 billion surplus, while we have a $2 billion deficit. So translate that into what are we doing in our schools? And the governor, the money that he puts into this, into public schools, he puts it in a way that's nothing in new school money or classroom instruction. It really goes towards property taxes. So the school system serves as sort of a pass-through. So all of this talk is for a $5 savings on your property taxes in the first year of the budget.
Because he's basically said in exchange for holding property taxes flat, he'll keep education funding flat.
Right. And so it becomes sort of a $10 decrease on property taxes over 2 years, $5 a year. In the last budget
– Per family.
Per family. And in the last budget, there was some pushback from some Senate Republicans who said we need to raise the per pupil cost. They raised it $150 per pupil. We did that in the last budget to get some new money into our schools. In this budget, the governor does away with that $150 per pupil in the first budget. So that's about $27 million cut, but then he reinstates it in the second year of the budget. I think it's about $165 million, but it nets out to be about $115 million loss to our schools. So at a time that they are being asked to do more with less, transportation costs are increasing and escalating, that this is really tough for our public schools. And it's not just Democrats that are talking about this. Republicans are uncomfortable about where this is going with our public schools, and hopefully with the re-estimates with our in April of tax collection, we'll have some additional money that we can put into our public schools or a university system or into transportation. But it's also editorial boards across the state are really saying this is a budget that really hammers on public education, and this is really a theme that the governor has had over the last several budgets. As we are underfunding public education, we are growing the voucher school program here in the state. We are lifting the caps. Right now it's 1,000 students per state. We are lifting those caps. And so now any student in the public schools can now move into a voucher school. The money will follow that person. I guess not that there's a lot to positive as we look at the education budget, but we have seen that 75% of the students who are in the voucher program were already in a public or in a private school already. So at least in this language of the budget, the governor says the students that are transferring into the voucher schools, they need to come from the public school. So at least we're not sort of picking those students who are already in that education system to then receive these vouchers from the state taxpayers. But it is really concerning, and I think as we digest what is happening, as we are talking with our local school boards, and it can be anything from our urban schools, our suburban schools, our rural schools, there are some nuggets. There are some crumbs for our rural schools when it comes to transportation, when it comes to infrastructure for broadband. But really, it's on the overall, it really is something that is very troubling for our public schools.
And Representative Billings, I know that you've not been in favor of the voucher program for a while. How could that impact the school districts in La Crosse and any sense that that program may not be expanded?
Well, the problem is that the money will follow the kids that end up in the private voucher schools. So it will be, again, less revenue for the school district. And they still have to keep buildings open. They still have to have classrooms. So losing those students does have an extra impact on the public school. And, again, part of the problem is that what we found in the last ability to take public funds and give them to private voucher schools is that most of those kids were already going to private voucher schools. We're also looking at testing with schools where there's a different number of tests that students can take or that schools can take to get a grade, right? So when a parent is looking at schools.
And this is something new that Governor Walker has proposed.
Right. So when you're looking at schools and a parent might say, well, let's look at these scores, it's not, they're looking at schools that are taking different tests. They have the option of possibly four or five different tests. So how do you as a parent look at a school and say, well, this grade is the same as that school, the grade of the school over there? It doesn't really provide transparency, which is what parents really wanted.
And for rural funding or for rural schools, how would the voucher school program play out in very rural districts where there may not be other options?
Well, in talking with my colleagues who represent predominantly rural schools, there just are not enough kids in the rural parts of the state to sort of make this feasible and to make it worthwhile. So as this is expanded, I doubt many schools will be, you know, taking advantage. I mean, rurally, it's just not something that makes sense because they just don't have the volume. They don't have the number of kids. And in our rural schools, it's transportation costs that they are concerned about, the distance from that it takes for to pick up kids and to bring them into school. There are some school districts that are looking at referendum this spring, and they are worried that if it doesn't pass, they are worried about sort of what their viability moving forward as a school district. Montello is one that has a referendum later this spring. So this is something that for a long time that the meat has really been or the fat has been cut out of these schools. We've talked about revenue limits, and we have not been we've backed away from our two-third commitment as a state that we were supposed to pick up two-thirds of the tab for our public schools. We have backed away from that as well, and we're just making it very difficult for schools to find an avenue for revenue for the programming and the personnel that they have.
And Joe Heim, beyond local referendums, is there anywhere else that the state could find funding for K-12 education?
Basically, for K-12 schools, it's property taxes and state revenues, shared revenues. I understood from talking to somebody earlier today, the formula, which, by the way, is badly in need of change, has not been changed.
And that's something Superintendent Tony Evers has advocated for.
This is the formula, how they allocate money. And to be honest, it's slightly biased. It's been that way for years. And some schools get aid when they frankly shouldn't be getting it.
Biased in what way?
Well, the formula is designed so that virtually everybody gets some money. I will comment on two things that I liked in this budget.
Mm-hmm.
One is that the voucher system is means tested. In other words, people above a certain income level, I suspect our legislators know this better than me, above, I think it's like 185% of the poverty rate, you have to be below that in order to use vouchers. The second thing is, which I really thought was targeted earlier is the fact that I think you have to go from a public school to a private school. You cannot go. In other words, right now, one of the criticisms is 75% of these kids are already in school. Therefore, what it was is a subsidy for parents who are already sending their kids to school in a private school. This is now going to force vouchers to go only to people who are going from a public school, and presumably somebody thinks they're failing, or at least the parents don't like it for whatever reason, and they could move their kid. If so, the means testing plus the moving from public to private at least improves some of the earlier criticism of vouchers.
I want to ask you a bit, Joheim, about the property tax issue too, because this does tie in with education funding. It seems like cutting property taxes is a very popular talking point for
politicians. In my lifetime, it's burnt into my brain that we are into property tax relief, property tax relief.
Why not? Why property taxes? Why not sales taxes?
People hate property taxes. You have to write a check once or twice a year, mm-hmm. big amount, and people dislike it. It's very regressive. It has nothing to do with how much money you have or how much money you're making. Some people have to leave their homes because, frankly, they cannot afford the property taxes. And there's major inequities in property taxes across the state of Wisconsin. There's huge differences, even in La Crosse area. So it's a regressive tax. It's the most hated tax, and that's where the governor is focusing on it, I would suspect.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today we're talking about the proposed state budget. My guests are UW-La Crosse Professor Emeritus of Political Science, Joheim, Minority Leader Senator Jennifer Schilling, a Democrat from La Crosse, and Representative Jill Billings, also a Democrat from La Crosse. Representative Billings, I want to talk with you about health care. Obviously, others can chime in. But, you know, we see the cost of healthcare continuing to rise. And according to the Milwaukee Business Journal, the proposed budget includes a $663 million spike in mostly Medicaid spending. This is something that you've talked a bit about in the past. But why is it that we're seeing, you know, spending continue to rise where in many other parts of the budget we're seeing a lot of cuts?
Well, I think this goes back to the problem 2 years ago when the governor should have taken Medicaid funding. He was asked by many county boards throughout the state who are the first line of delivery of services, and he could have taken those federal dollars, brought those federal dollars home to Wisconsin where they belong, but instead decided to do things his own way. Unfortunately, this is part of his plan of how he's a great reformer, and I think we probably won't see a change in that as long as he is still considering running for president in 2016.
And Senator Schilling, I mean, is there any sense that the legislature this year could decide to accept that federal Medicaid funding?
According to the Assembly Speaker, he would not move in that direction at all. The governor has seemed pretty firm on it. Senator Luther Olson has raised that issue in the state Senate. And I think last year there were several senators who were interested in at least having a discussion on it. We had, you know, additional funds at that time, and they said, no, we don't need to do it. Now we are at a different time where we are in a deficit of $2 billion, and that $250 million to $315 million is pretty attractive as a way to build a better budget. And certainly the Medicaid budget is one of the fastest-growing parts of the budget that they are allocated $657 million additional funding in 2015-2017 over the base because that population continues to grow, and that is health insurance and access for low-income individuals in the state, for elderly, for children, for people with disabilities. He also looks at, and this is something I've been talking about for many years, he creates a three-county pilot for dental MA reimbursement, which I'm pleased to see that. And for many years, we've been talking about having one here in La Crosse County, but the counties that he talked about is Brown, Polk, and Racine. So
how would that play out?
Well, and that's the devil's in the details, and I want to learn more about that, but dentists are under reimbursed, and for they see Medicaid patients that they probably are reimbursed about 60% on the dollar, so or 40% on the dollar. So by doing a pilot program and bumping up that reimbursement into that 75th percentile, that 75% of those dentists in the area would be reimbursed at a level that is appropriate. If we can collect the data to demonstrate that dentists would see those patients if the money is there to offset the loss that they are seeing, and we can bring up to actually what are the true costs of serving that population. I think that that is that's a movement in the right direction. So I'm pleased to see that. But certainly as we look at other areas, as Representative Billings pointed out, the governor is not interested in taking that Medicaid money that is available. In the last budget, we kind of offset that with the hospitals with a DSH payment, DSH payment, that we partnered with the federal government for about $74 million to help those hospital health systems that see Medicaid patients offset their loss. The governor has put in $30 million here, and we'll have to see what the federal appropriation is if we bump that up. So there are some areas that the governor has said it's woefully inadequate, but there are things that he has looked at in return of not accepting that federal Medicaid money, but it's not keeping up with the pace and the cost of this population and this program.
Beyond accepting those funds, is there anything else the legislature can do to control Medicaid costs?
Well, I've always been one to talk about health and wellness and how do we incentivize that population about health and wellness, about nutrition, about wellness checks, and making sure that, you know, kids are immunized, that they are offering healthy incentives in that population. And it is tough. I mean, dental care is one area that we need to make sure that we have, preventative measures. And I think in the business sector, they get it, that they have a healthy population, a healthy workforce. Morale is better. Output is better. And I mean, they see it. We see in the business sector how they are moving towards health and wellness initiatives within their workplace. So we need to make sure that we are incentivizing it and seeing that same kind of turnaround and emphasis on healthy health and wellness within that Medicaid population.
And Joe Heim, if Governor Walker did accept the federal Medicaid dollars, we've seen stories saying, oh, but it could fill the budget and plug the holes here and there. Could that really work out that way?
It would certainly help. A couple hundred million a year, it's not bad. I've seen projections well into the trillions down the road on this in terms of how much money Wisconsin's losing over time.
And Representative Billings, another issue that goes along with healthcare funding is it's been reported that the Senior Care Prescription Drug Program could be facing $15 million in cuts. And, you know, some say that this could have a major impact on seniors. Are you hearing about this from your constituents?
Yes, this budget forces senior care applicants to apply for a Medicare Part D. It cuts senior care by $15 million, which is, as you said, 40% reduction. And these are seniors who they like the program that we have set up in Wisconsin. They don't have the donut hole. They can get the medications that we need. The worst situation to put a senior in is a situation where they have to decide between being able to afford prescription medication or food. And we need to take care of our seniors. And this was a great program that was set up through the state. And seniors want it, and they have come to rely on it. And we need to keep it whole.
This is an example of good federal money and bad federal money in the eyes of the governor. And suddenly the governor sees federal money in Medicare Part D and shifting seniors into that program, which is more confusing and more difficult to oversee, and pushing them into that program versus the state program of senior care. So while on one side, Medicare Part D dollars, federal dollars, good, but the Medicaid expansion, federal dollars, bad.
So, Joe Heim, not all federal money is created equal?
Apparently not. This is one of those issues where, frankly, you look at it and say it has to do with presidential politics. Republican governors almost uniformly, not uniformly, but many Republican governors have rejected it, but some have taken it, recognizing that it's a net benefit to their state, frankly. The Ohio governor, for example, accepted money and said, I cannot deny people in Ohio, federal dollars for Medicaid. So it's, I think this is something built into the presidential contest, and unfortunately it's politicized the whole area.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today we're talking about the proposed state budget. My guests are UW-La Crosse Political Science Professor Emeritus Joe Heim, Minority Leader Senator Jennifer Schilling, a La Crosse Democrat, and Representative Jill Billings, also a Democrat from La Crosse. We invited a number of Western Wisconsin Republican lawmakers to appear on this show, but they either declined our offer or could not fit it in their schedule. You're
listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, our conversation on the budget continues, and we'll talk about proposed changes at the Department of Natural Resources and economic development priorities. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Governor Scott Walker released the state's next proposed biennium budget last week. While issues like the UW system and voucher expansions have dominated the headlines, there are hundreds of other issues and programs included in the budget that could affect Western Wisconsin families. Here today to talk about what that may be are Minority Leader Senator Jennifer Schilling, a Democrat from La Crosse, Representative Jill Billings, another Democrat from La Crosse, and Joe Heim. He's UW La Crosse Professor Emeritus of Political Science. We did invite a number of Western Wisconsin Republican lawmakers to appear on this show, but they either could not fit it in the schedule or they declined our offer. So let's talk about the Department of Natural Resources. Last week, we heard a lot about the department could face $53 million budget cut, number of jobs could be eliminated, especially research positions, be changes to the stewardship fund. When you see all of this, Representative Billings, maybe let's start with you. What's your interpretation of what's going on at the DNR?
I think that part of it is consolidation of power. I think it's a mistake to transform the board of the DNR and DATCAP into simple advisory councils. I know a lot of people in our area take part in the Conservation Congress when we have the general meetings, and it's wonderful to be there to hear about the citizens who know firsthand, who either are part of recreation or hunting, and get to look over rules and policies and then give that information to the board. And it takes that group even one step farther away, which I think is a huge mistake. They've cut scientists out of the DNR. These are people, especially with the expansion of frack sand mining, that we need more scientists in the DNR rather than less to help make sure that we're doing right by our environment.
We have a lot of water quality scientists that you hear a lot about in the area, too.
Yes, exactly. And then finally, the stewardship program was basically won't exist for the next several years. Under this budget, which is a huge mistake, as so many of us in this area appreciate our bluff land, that land that has been set aside for this with efforts that started over 100 years ago. And we recreate there. It's huge for our tourism industry. There's some upset about that on both sides of the aisle, and we'll see where that will go, because I think people understand the value of preserving those public lands, because once they're developed, it's next to impossible to bring them back.
And there could be some changes to the Kickapoo Valley Reserve located nearby here. There's some talk about shifting it from the Department of Tourism to the Department of Natural Resources. I think they are trying to figure out what exactly all these changes could mean. Does anyone here know exactly what's going on?
At the Chamber of Commerce breakfast, Representative Neerson was talking about that issue specifically, that there is a history there where it was not put under – it was put under tourism because there was an understanding of being able to value that as a program that benefited so many people in the area and was such a benefit to tourism. And there was quite a fight over it, and that was decided back in that history. And to change it at this point seems ill-advised to me.
Senator Schilling?
Well, I think, the broad picture, we look at the stewardship fund, and I'll get back to the Kickapoo Reserve
Board.
Of course. But when you look at the stewardship fund, it basically ends the stewardship fund. It puts a freeze on acquiring lands for 13 years, which I don't think Governor Walker will be our governor in 13 years. So it even sort of – it's a head-scratcher of how we can put that into language and into statute so many years forward, because possibly in 2 or 4 years we could certainly change that language. But it is very disheartening to think of sort of the tradition that Wisconsin has to protect our natural resources, that there is a partnership with the state and with local landowners and local units of government to protect really environmentally sensitive tracts of land here in Wisconsin. And so I think that is certainly very troubling, that freeze on the stewardship program and kind of ending that over the next 13 years. On the Kickapoo Reserve, that is something that I think I hope we can look at the language, and it may not just be as simple as deleting the language that the governor put in, but certainly there is a lot of family, generation, and emotion that goes with that land tract being kind of singled out as a co-managed between the state of Wisconsin and with the Ho-Chunk tribe. And it goes back really generations for that dam project that never materialized, and families whose land was taken by them, by the federal government, and then the dam never materialized. It took a long time, and my predecessor, Senator Rood, Representative Dwayne Johns Rood, and many family members and citizens of the Kickapoo Valley in that Driftless area sat down and designed sort of the makeup of this board and the oversight and the governance of that board to be very local because it was such a personal issue. And having it within the tourism department, you know, emphasized the important role that it has. And I think by bringing it into the Department of Natural Resources, there are really some concerns about how that land could possibly be used. It is environmentally sensitive. It is a jewel. It is a gem. It is used in all seasons for many different uses and multi-uses of it. But as you look at really the local parts of the budget and what could really affect, you know, the community that you live in, working through and trying to exactly understand what happens with that Kickapoo Reserve Board, that the board remains, but really that oversight and being brought into the DNR board and what that means as far as that oversight and what possibilities that the Department of Natural Resources could exercise over the board is concerning.
Joe Heim, your take on all these proposed changes to the DNR?
Well, the DNR thing is in a bigger picture. I think the governor in general and Republicans in general believe in deregulation. I mean, that's kind of a basic element of their party. And I see a number of these things as simply deregulation. They want less government involvement in certain areas, and the DNR is just one of them. Wisconsin has had a history of public involvement in citizen boards. I'm going to say we have hundreds of them, but I know we have a lot of them. And we've always involved citizens and things. And generally, these are nonpartisan type of boards for the most part. So it's sort of disconcerting to see this deregulation process evolve. But it's essentially a reflection of the sign of the times and who's in charge, frankly.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are UW-La Crosse Political Science Professor Emeritus Joe Heim, Minority Leader Senator Jennifer Schilling, a Democrat from La Crosse, and Representative Jill Billings, a Democrat from La Crosse. In the last week and a half, in hearing about the budget, we haven't really heard much about economic development or job growth. Obviously, Governor Walker had run on a $250,000 job creation pledge, which he didn't reach that benchmark. But through the election season, we heard so much about jobs, 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 but we're not hearing about that in this budget. Senator Schilling?
Well, and he talks about merging his quasi-government agency that has economic development, the WEDIC, which was created out of the last budget. He merges WEDIC with WEDA into the Ford Wisconsin Development Authority. And so I know talking with some of my colleagues, they are concerned about the merging of agencies because this was poorly rolled out in the last budget. And when we went from the Department of Commerce to the WEDIC agency, that there were a lot of issues. There were several audits that came out because there was money that was being misappropriated, that there were practices that were not able to be done under state law. And by having legislators on that board, that was able to be the eyes and ears of taxpayers to be able to catch these things, bring it to the attention of the audit bureau, and really exercise legislative oversight. The governor is looking at removing those four legislators and really replacing it with just a private sector representatives, and I think that is dangerous because certainly job creation is something that is so important in economic development in this state, and because as a state we partner with our regional economic partners, we partner with our local units of government, but I think we have a responsibility as legislators to the taxpayers to make sure that their voices are on this board. And so kind of a way of privatizing the job creation, economic development, I think is troubling, and I think people are really trying to take a slow approach as we do that. He does add $55 million to Ford Wisconsin Development Authority to create regional revolving loan funds, and Recently, Representative Doyle, Billings, and myself sat down with many of our economic development partners in the region, and we talked about the money that is currently in the revolving loans regionally, and part of the definition and the problems is actually administering it. So I'm interested and intrigued with this $55 million addition to the revolving loans. I want to know more about it, but how we can get that money out to the regions and the communities and the small businesses that know it. We've got money that's sitting there that they currently can't access. We need to do a better job of getting that out the door.
Jill Billings?
There's an item in the budget that affects my area specifically, and an area that I was interested in and worked to help advocate for as it was working through the legislation is the historic rehab tax credit. That's capped at $10 million annually. And so I know that there's a lot of people who are really interested in that piece. I think that helps with our historic downtowns, which also helps with tourism, along with job development. So the credits are still going to be awarded based on job creation potential, and it's mandatory repayment if the job creation goals are not met, which seems fair to me, but I know there's a high need for that program, and I think that's a nice job developer. And so going forward, we'll see if we can put some more funding in that possibly.
Joe Heim.
Political campaigns run on things like job creation, and then immediately after elections, it just sort of evaporates.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed by that, too. But in a different sense, however, the economy of the state is slowly picking up. The national economy is growing very dramatically the last several months. Wisconsin, however, is still lagging the growth in the national economy, and that's got to be disconcerting. By the way, you mentioned job creation. I do want to mention that the UW mission statement issue, the governor did want to interject into that statement the idea that the university system should be producing graduates to fill specific jobs in the state. So that was his bow to that area, at least as far as the university is concerned.
Are there any other budget items that really could spawn economic growth, I'm assuming in the private sector?
Well, in the last budget, we put $25 million into venture capital, and I think that was the best we could do at that time. And you look at other states, and they have a much more robust program for venture capital. And so I haven't combed through and seen any numbers that really jump out. We may keep the same level of $25 million but in the venture capital. But that's one area, if we could, I would like to beef that up for opportunities for angel investment and those networks that helping small businesses access that capital is so important. And I think by having a more robust venture capital fund that would be helpful. But I haven't really seen where the governor's putting any additional money into that.
And along the lines of not necessarily job creation, but making it easier for families to work, Representative Billings, you've talked about how you'd like to see funding for childcare in the budget. Where does the budget sit when it comes to that?
Under childcare, there are a few elements that Senator Schilling and I have had listening sessions with childcare providers in this area. So there are a couple elements that provide a little bit of relief when it comes to that reporting after someone has done a background check. Instead of doing the 4-year background checks on caregivers, they have to then they're good unless they have new employees come on. They have to do the background check again, but not quite as many repeated checks on someone. And then also for child care providers, that they don't have to, when they're renewing their license, they don't have to do background checks as often as they did in the past. So that helps with some of the paperwork that was involved. But we heard some more issues with them that I would like to pursue as separate legislation as we go into the session.
Like tax credits for families, or how exactly would that work out?
Well, I think that families need some relief, and tax credits would absolutely be something that could be helpful. As we talked to child care providers, they talked about different licensure things. And in the Young Star program, with the rating, ways that we could tweak that and help with their rating and be able to get a 2-star, 3-star, or 4-star. Some of the regulations didn't seem to make sense. And so I think we could be able to work within that too.
I want to briefly touch on the transportation funding issue, because I know this is something that Democrats and Republicans both have been a little wary about. Governor Walker is looking to borrow $1.3 billion to fund transportation projects in the state. you know, I know there's some concern as to whether or not borrowing that money is the right way to go about this, but could that fund any Southwest Wisconsin transportation projects? And is this the best way to do it?
That was one of the loudest criticisms I heard from, you know, across the political spectrum was the governor's $1.3 billion of borrowing and bonding, basically putting it on the credit card for this biennium. And many of my colleagues, Democrat and Republican, are pushing back and saying that that is not the responsible thing to do. We would like something more long-term, more sustainable than continuing borrowing, that that's going to be scaled way back. If you remember in November or December, his Secretary of Transportation, Secretary Gottlieb, put out recommendations of about $760 million in fee and tax increases. And the governor quickly rebuffed any of that. And so what we have now is this increased borrowing. And interestingly enough, even you know, when we talked about the previous question about economic development, under economic development and jobs, the governor puts forward a sports and entertainment district for the Milwaukee Bucks, that arena. Like, he's seeing that as job creation. But again, that's $220 million that on borrowing. So I think we're going to see a lot of changes there. One of the areas I'm concerned about, well, with transportation in this last budget, I think we had funds for bike and pedestrian projects to be incorporated when they do road
the complete
projects.
Streets. Or
complete streets, mm-hmm. Yes. And in this budget, the governor does away with that and does not require it. And I certainly think as we are looking at multi, you know, modal societies, we want to make sure that if people want to walk and bike and use other alternatives to you know, trek to cars, that we need to make sure that they are, it's safe. And I was, you know, disappointed to see that the governor has done away with that complete streets requirement. I think as some of the projects locally in western Wisconsin, outside of La Crosse, but other in some of my smaller communities, to have that complete streets element has meant, you know, safer transportation routes for people if they're on their bikes, if they're walking, what have you. And so that's one area I hope we can revisit, is bringing back that complete streets within transportation.
So, Joheim, if there's skepticism about borrowing money for transportation, how else can these projects be funded?
Well, the irony, according to the governor, is that they are borrowing less this biennium than they have in many years. In other words, other types of bonding are going to be cut back severely. I'm talking about buildings. So there are winners and losers in this budget, and the winners would be the road construction people, and the losers might be the construction of building people. That's the way I see it. I don't know exactly what projects are going to continue. But essentially, for example, on this campus, there's a couple projects that are in jeopardy at this point.
We only have a couple minutes left, so I want to go down the line and see beyond the issues we've talked about today. Representative Billings, what are your priorities? What are you really hoping does stay in the budget? Maybe what are you hoping is removed from the budget?
Well, I think that there are some positive elements with some funding for human trafficking, $2 million, and that helps with some legislation that I'm working on, providing safe harbor for children, so that when they're found and taken out of off the streets, that there's help for them. There's some good stuff with domestic violence, some more help for domestic violence victims. You know, for me, I don't like the idea of borrowing for transportation, and that provides some concern on both sides of the aisle. I'm mostly concerned for education. Wisconsin has always been known as a state that has wonderful education, whether it's pre-K to get grade 12, our tech colleges, our university system. And over the past several years, they've taken hit after hit after hit. So now they're really living on shoestring budgets. Teachers have talked about encouraging their children to not go into teaching. So I'm concerned 5 years down the road, what's going to happen? And we need our quality teachers. And we need our quality educational systems. This is what fuels our economy. These are our skilled workers that we need for future generations, and we have to invest in them.
And Senator Schilling, your priorities for the budget?
Well, I think that the priority in this budget is Governor Doyle or Governor Walker put forward is a presidential bid. I mean, this is clearly a budget that is aimed at a national attention and maybe the base in Iowa or New Hampshire as he goes out and campaigns. So clearly this is a budget that we don't talk enough about the opportunities to move our state forward, that this governor and this budget fails to create economic opportunities for working families in this state. It makes massive cuts to our public schools, our university system, irresponsible responsible borrowing on long-term on funding road projects. And we need to get back to basics. We need a budget right now. And unfortunately, as I said at the onset, many other states are on the upswing. They have a trajectory of growth. We, unfortunately, in Wisconsin, this is a recession budget. We continue to cut. We need to be investing in people. We need to be investing in education. We need to be investing in workforce development in order to bring ourselves up to our neighboring states, what they have in job creation. We still are 37th, I think, in the nation for job creation. So there certainly is a lot of work to be done. I think there are a lot of conversations that are happening on both sides of the aisle because there is a general level of uneasiness about what the governor has done to our public schools and our university system and that we can do better and we need to do better.
And Joe Heim, briefly, your thoughts?
My suggestion and hope would be that the UW system issue, both the $300 million, which is just it could be a devastating cut for many campuses, is reduced. That's one thing I would like to see happen. More importantly, however, I'd like to see the UW system issue of changing from a state agency to a state authority. That is a very big move. It's the most significant thing that's happened to the UW system in 40 years. I think it should be taken out of the budget and looked at more clearly by itself.
Joe Heim is a UW La Crosse Professor Emeritus of Political Science. Minority Leader Senator Jennifer Schilling is a Democrat from La Crosse. And Representative Jill Billings is also a Democrat from La Crosse. We invited a number of Western Wisconsin Republican lawmakers to appear on the show, but they declined our offer. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To visit our website, go to wpr.org/newsmakers.